should a practicing occultist or a magician or a witch or whatever you want to call them, should they only be focusing on the stuff that is designed to like elevate the spirit and purify the soul and move us closer to some sort of like godly revelation, or should they be using, you know, the influences of energy and spirits and stars to change the world around them? And I think it's a combination of both.
Welcome to the Cosmic Keys Podcast. This is going to be your episode for April 1st, 2019, all the way to April 7th, 2019. And we have a really fun interview for you guys today with Eric Arneson of My Alchemical Bromance Podcast. It's a really fun discussion where we go over things like Freemasonry and what the occult scene is like in Portland. So definitely stay tuned for that. But before we get into the interview, let's do our forecast for this week. And I think we got the moon card last week, right?
We did, yeah.
So did you have any like deep-seated demons come through?
Okay, well, I was thinking about that. Like, I guess during Mercury retrograde, I try to make a point to revisit my journals from the past, because I'm a journaler. Like, I literally have like a Gmail account where I've been keeping track of my life for years, and I'm just trying to keep track, trying to put my whole past few years into perspective. And I was rereading that stuff this week and sort of realizing how far I've come in a way. So first of all, it was making me realize like how I used to worry way more about life and about what people thought of me and what I should be doing and what hoops I should be jumping through. And it, I don't know, it just put everything into perspective. And it's like the whole, I guess like I've been thinking a lot about the law of attraction, because I am it today in a pretty good, happy time in my life, especially in comparison to reading my old journals and stuff. And now it's like I need to just like focus on the good to draw in more good and not have negative thoughts. So like realizing what negative thoughts are made me think of the moon card. And also like kind of out of the blue, I had somebody reach out to me to do an astrology reading over Skype. And I sort of do that, and I'm trying to do it more. But that was really powerful. Like I did the reading. Maybe the person I did it for is listening. But we went deep and stuff. And I was like, okay, yeah, I do serve this role as an astrologer. And it kind of made me realize, you know, my own role as sort of like in the healing arts, I guess, and sort of being like sort of an esoteric garage shrink for certain people, you know. So that made me think of the moon card. And I also had some crazy like lucid dreaming astral projection crap happens right when Mercury was near Neptune. Yeah. So, but no like major like dark spooky moon card drama. It was a pretty good week in general. But how about you?
Yeah, I think the same. I didn't have any like crazy drama going on. I definitely had some weird ass dreams. But I tend to get a lot of like weird lucid dreams, so it's not too out of the ordinary. And yeah, the moon card, it's not just kind of about like this shadow side coming through. I like what you said, like kind of doing that astrology reading, kind of like finding like, okay, I'm accepting that this is this role that I'm doing. Because the moon card has got that like crooked road, like not everyone can walk that road, you know. And the moon card in a way is, it's the moon, so it's in part tied to the High Priestess, which is all about being brave enough to just kind of decide, you know, I'm going to walk that edge of the unknown, of sane and insane, and just kind of keep going down that path and see where it leads. So I kind of feel like we're both on that, you know, crooked path in a way.
Yeah. And even just doing the reading, I mean, you know, I take astrology very seriously. It's a huge part of my life. It's why we have this show. But even when we're doing this forecast, you know, we're putting it out there, and there aren't necessarily like spooky, like goosebumps moments of just doing a forecast every week. But doing that reading, it's like, oh shit, this is actually not just like my studious intellectual pursuit. There is actually like a supernatural, unexplainable component just with the way that their chart was matching what I was saying and things were revealing themselves throughout. And it just gave me the sense like, yeah, this is no joke. You know, it's deep. It's the moon.
Yeah. Well, are we ready to see what our card for this upcoming week is?
We are. Let's see what you got.
I'm going to give it a couple more shuffles. And I'm actually going to be flying to Japan on Thursday. So the only card I don't want to see is the Tower card, because lately I've been a little bit freaked out with airplanes because that plane went down. Did you remember hearing about that a couple weeks ago? I think it was in like Africa, maybe Ethiopia, where they grounded all of the same type of planes that were made by Boeing because they had some like malfunction.
I did hear some Mercury retrograde stuff about like some planes in Europe like literally just going to the wrong airport somehow.
Yeah, there's just been some weird stuff going on with planes, and I used to not like be as worried, but now I'm like starting to get a little more worried. But we'll see what we have coming up.
If ahead. It's your time, it's your time.
Yeah, I'm just kind of
you're more off. Likely to get in a car accident than a plane crash. And yeah. I drive all day, so
that's very true. Yeah. Okay, are we ready?
Yeah, let's see.
Knight of Pentacles makes another appearance.
Wow.
He's coming back into our lives like Mr. Chariot did a couple times.
Yeah.
Knight of Pentacles. It's all about being practical, man. And I need this card right now because my life is a little bit of a mess. just kind of practically, things have been really busy. Like, oddly. Like, I've been getting like a lot more stuff coming in, like readings and stuff like that for my business. And at the same time, I've been really overwhelmed with just kind of like, how do I answer all the messages each day and like answer people's questions and kind of fit that all into my schedule while at the same time like creating content and all this kind of other stuff. So I think the Knight of Pentacles is here, at least for me, to show me like, I need to slow down, man. It's okay if I can't get to everything every day, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm still kind of putting the seeds in the ground, waiting for things to grow, and they are growing, but with the horse kind of being stopped still, it's like, you got to take your time and let things settle, let things grow at their own pace.
Well, yeah, so we got this 2 weeks ago, and yeah. I remember when we got that card 2 weeks ago, I just met some clients for my real estate job. And I was like, oh, damn, all of a sudden I'm really a real estate agent again and like really doing it and, you know, could possibly make some money, you know, because when you're in sales, you never really know. And that card that week made me realize sort of the stability that my day job offers me, because I do have a day job. I'm not a full-time astrologer or podcaster or artist. So, and since that week, my attitude has been getting, you know, more and more positive. Like, I don't hate my day job. Like, I used to have situations where like, oh, I hate my day job. I just can't wait to like get done with work and do what I'm passionate about. But now I'm like, thank God I have this day job, because like now the stress and worry of being like a starving artist is just kind of gone. And those clients that I started working with, even back then, I was a little bit hesitant, like, don't get your hopes up. It's not a sealed deal. But in the time since from then to now, we have been working more, and it is looking more optimistic. So I think for our listeners, whatever this card meant for you 2 weeks ago, this might have sort of a new meaning this week, or a continuation of it this week. And you think about it, we had the moon in between, and I really thought of the moon as like, what are your negative emotions and thoughts that are drawing negativity towards you in regard to money and stability, and how can you manage those and sort of use the law of attraction to like draw in the good and and keep the bad thoughts at bay. So yeah, maybe just like take what you've learned from the moon card last week and don't let those like psychic self-sabotages happen in the topic of money and stability, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's also kind of like being cool with where you're at, you know, too. At the same time, like, you're not the King of Pentacles at this time. You're not the top of your game yet. But the Knight of Pentacles shows that you made that plan. You set yourself on this path. And you just got to keep steady. It's all about kind of the steady day-to-day routine. Even if it feels a little bit boring sometimes, you're headed in the right direction. And that day in and day out consistent work is what's going to get you there.
Well, it's interesting too, because, you know, now that as we get into the astrology forecast for the week ahead, last week was when Mercury went direct, and it's technically the end of this Mercury retrograde in Pisces month.
Woohoo!
Yeah, with all of the Pisces stuff that happened. But, you know, we said that last week wasn't the end. It's not over yet. And when I look at this week, this is sort of when it really does end, and when you really can shift out of that watery moon card Pisces energy into this stable Knight of Pentacles earth energy. So when I look at the forecast, starting on the first, you know, the moon will be in Pisces at the start of the week. And so it's going to start off sort of moon card, you know, like picking up that watery energy in the beginning.
And be careful because it's April Fool's Day. So
yeah.
Be suspicious.
And so Mercury went direct last Thursday. And as Mercury starts moving forward again to move its way out of the sign of Pisces, this week, it's going to be getting closer and closer to Neptune. And on Tuesday, April 2nd, Mercury makes a conjunction with Neptune. So I think this conjunction with Neptune might make the Mercury retrograde stuff extend into the very beginning of the week. And Tuesday, you might be like, I thought Mercury retrograde is over. Why am I having these crazy malfunctions and stuff? When Mercury makes that connection with Neptune on Tuesday, that's sort of a big hurdle that will get passed. And then from Tuesday moving forward, the retrograde crap will really start to fade, and you'll really get a sense of your mind moving in a forward direction away from the confusion and stuff. And also, you know, like when we were talking about the moon card and stuff, when Mercury made this conjunction with Neptune last week, I had like crazy lucid dreams, astral projection type experiences. So this might be something to look forward to. Like on Tuesday, if you have a dream journal, like, and also the moon is going to be connecting with Mercury and with Neptune. So moon, Mercury, and Neptune are all going to be kind of connecting on Tuesday in Pisces. So that's like super psychic and super lucid dream friendly. So honestly, like, pull out the crystal ball, pull out the dream journal, pull out the tarot cards, pull out the whatever, like mushrooms, weed, whatever. I mean, I'm saying mushrooms because Rune Soup just had an episode on like taking shrooms, but that's just me thinking out loud. But yeah, you know, Tuesday is a great psychic and sort of mystical day with the moon, Mercury, and Neptune all coming together. Then as we look ahead, as the week goes further, this is building towards Friday, which is going to be the new moon in Aries. So Friday, it's going to be really early in the morning, 4:50 a.m. Eastern time. We get our new moon in Aries. So like, I think of this as a strong new moon because we're out of this Mercury retrograde thing. And when you think of the new moon as a new beginning, this is a new beginning in the fire sign of Aries, like spring forward, spring energy. So
I'm so happy to start feeling that.
I think it's, we're honestly, I sort of dread this time of the year with like spring in Chicago. It can be really bad. We are getting some blue skies. We are getting warm weather. And I'm just like, I feel that Aries excitement, you know, almost like the, and Aries is known for being really impatient too. Like you want to start moving forward, but the month of April actually is sort of like highly contrasted from the month of March. And there's just a lot to start looking forward to in April. And this Friday, April 5th, I think that's going to be like really a good starting point for starting something fresh. And then beyond that, really, the only other aspect that's happening will be on Saturday, April 7th. Mercury is going to sextile Saturn.
Sunday, you mean?
Did I say Saturday?
Yeah.
Sunday, April 7th, Mercury is going to sextile Saturn. So this is an aspect that we already experienced a couple weeks ago because, you know, when Mercury moves backwards and forwards again, he hits these planets twice. So sextiling to Saturn is sort of just yet another indicator of like fixing whatever got screwed up by the retrograde or bringing clarity to whatever was confusing about the retrograde motion. So like when Mercury in Pisces sextiles Saturn in Capricorn, that'll give you a nice moment of clarity for the week ahead. So your thoughts are more clear and focused and sort of organized as opposed to just like confused and flooded or extra psychic like they were earlier in the week. But yeah, that's pretty much it for the astrology of the week. Not a ton of action happening. Yeah, there's going to be like the month of April will still be busy. And, you know, now that Mercury retrograde is over, it is a time to reflect on like what you actually learned from the confusion or from the month of March. So I think it's good to like, now that we're in April, just think what happened in March. Was it totally awful? Was it totally bad? And like, think about where you are now and think about where you're moving forward towards. And the Knight of Pentacles being our card of the week, you know, I think there is like a patience element to it because Mercury wrapping up this retrograde stuff in Pisces, it makes sense that we have like an Earth card to sort of have a really practical thing to have this great new beginning on Friday with the new moon in Aries. And then the month of April, with all the fun stuff that's happening in April and on into the spring, it's a good week to plan ahead and sort of prepare.
Yeah, definitely. I think it brings good balance for sure.
Yeah, and even just thinking, you know, like Mercury goes retrograde a lot. It happens for 3 weeks a year, three times a year. So we're done with this one. The next one is going to be happening in July. And this is looking pretty far ahead, but July is going to be kind of a gnarly month. So I guess, yeah, my advice is just think about like what came up in the month of March and how can you use the Knight of Pentacles to be practical about the month of April? Because you have to be strategic with forecasting your weeks on a weekly and monthly basis. Like if you know you're going to be in the clear for a while, you need to take advantage of it before stuff goes haywire once again. So
yeah, definitely. Well, I think it's going to be a good week then coming up. Lots of fun things to look forward to. And I'll be gone next week. So I'm heading to Japan for a while. So that'll be fun. And I'm just glad I did not get that tower card.
you should definitely, I mean, how can you be earthy in Japan? There's probably a lot of great ways.
The cherry blossoms are blooming right now. Oh. So just kind of like the literal earth element, I think, is going to be very present.
I think of like a Zen garden.
Well, I'm going to a friend's Shinto wedding. So like at a Shinto temple. Yeah. So it's going to be very like earthy. I'm really excited to see what a traditional Shinto wedding ceremony is going to be like, and connecting with that kind of energy. And I'm going to visit a ton of other temples there, so I'm sure I'll have some good stories when I get back.
Yeah, it's better than having like an overactive like fire card or something, or like a nasty like swords card, you know. If you have an earth card at a wedding, you know, you can just be like sort of like solid and stable and
oh yeah, the Knight of Pentacles is who you want to marry. This is someone who's stable, yeah. Got a good job, you know, isn't going to run off and do some crazy stuff. So yeah, Knight of Pentacles is like the ideal husband. Maybe not the ideal date, but yeah. The ideal life partner.
Yeah, and it might be a sign that, you know, you won't have to deal with like financial stress while you're there, because that can't.
That's true too. I probably won't like lose my wallet or anything.
Yeah, I sometimes, well, I'm a bad example, but sometimes I go on vacation and then spend too much on my credit card, and then when it's over, I'm like, what have I done?
Yeah. Well, so we are going to jump into our interview section now, so definitely stay tuned for that, and hearing from Eric from My Alchemical Bromance.
Alright guys, so today we are super excited. We have Eric Arneson on our show. Eric is the host of a really great podcast called My Alchemical Bromance, which is a great title, first of all. His show, it gets really deep into a lot of like really interesting specific topics related to the occult. I think of, you know, you've talked about Picatrix, you talk about really scholarly stuff, and I love hearing all of these sort of in-depth conversations. And My Alchemical Bromance is fun too. Like, often they're drinking beers, talking about beers, and it's casual conversations. But you know, if you hear our show and you want to get really deep, a little bit deeper maybe, I think My Alchemical Bromance offers that. But welcome to Cosmic Keys to Eric. How you doing today, Eric?
I'm doing pretty good. It's a lovely Friday.
Awesome. So yeah, we are super excited to have you on our show today. And we've been really enjoying listening to your episodes. And it seems like you guys cover quite a few different topics within kind of the various occult community and esoteric ideas and things like that. So I'd like to know, just to start off, what's the origin story of your podcast? Like, why did you decide to start My Alchemical Bromance?
I got tricked into starting My Alchemical Bromance. I wasn't intending to start a podcast, but one of my, I'm sort of a co-host, even though I'm the only host that really shows up most of the time. But one of the other guys, Matt, he had a podcast on Freemasonry, and we were just having like this weekend where a few of us were hanging out, drinking beer, telling weird stories, and I was telling weird stories, and I have a lot of weird stories in my past, but he was laughing and laughing and laughing. He's like, Eric, this is great, we should do a podcast. I said, okay. And I thought he was talking about doing a podcast episode, and I thought he wanted to interview me about Freemasonry for his Masonic podcast. But then before I knew it, he had like the name picked out, and he was like, here's the format, here's what we're going to do, here's how we're going to record it. And I'm like, this is a lot of work for one episode. He said, this isn't an episode, this is a whole podcast. And then he left me to run it. So that's the really short version. And originally it was just going to be the three of us, Matt and Joey and I, and we were just going to, every episode was going to be the three of us sitting around drinking beer. We were either going to visit breweries or have like a tasting at one of our houses, and we would pick some occult topic and we would talk about it and record it. But they have real lives and ran out of free time, whereas I am a really slacker oriented freelancer and have tons of free time.
I'm kind of similar.
Yeah, it's a great way to live. It's a great way to live. Yeah. I mean, unless you have to pay bills. So I just started doing it on my own. And one of the things I started doing was reaching out to people that I knew in the occult community or in the Masonic community to interview them I was going to try to do mostly local people because Portland is filled with weirdos. But it soon became pretty obvious that I didn't want to just keep to local people. So I started reaching out. And I've had some really surprising and really fascinating guests. You know, you're talking about some of the interesting deep topics we get into. Sometimes it's stuff that I'm really interested in. Sometimes I'm kind of clueless on it. Sometimes I end up interviewing people who are so much more intelligent than I could ever hope to be, which I think that's kind of what you want to do on a podcast. I'm not sure. But it's been pretty fascinating. Like, yeah, did I answer the question? That was, I started to ramble there a little bit.
No, you definitely answered the question. That was great. So yeah, I have the vibe too. I've never been to Portland, but that there's some weird, unique individuals there. Is there kind of like a cool occult community there, would you say, or what's the vibe like?
I really don't want to make you guys too jealous. So try not to, you know, so basically Portland doesn't have a cool occult community. It has like dozens of them.
Oh, wow.
It's bizarre. I've been trying to explore and kind of connect with them, but it's totally, you know, there are secret groups, there are public groups, there are Wiccans, there's a Golden Dawn organization, allegedly. There are lodges of Freemasons that are filled with esoteric stuff. There are clandestine Masonic organizations. There are informal groups. There's a group of friggin' chaos magician artists that's just like blocks away from here that do crazy stuff. There are like four different occult themed podcasts out of Portland that at least maybe there are more. Oh shit, there are more. I just remembered there's a Wiccan podcast that just started up. Like they're all over the place. There's covens. It's tons and tons of people in Portland are into this stuff. We're a fairly small city. Like Portland, inside Portland city limits, has fewer than a million people, and yet I think we have probably like six different occult shops. In fact, sometimes I'll find out about occult shops that have like been there for years that I just had never noticed. So there are probably more than six.
Wow. Yeah, we like on this show, we always kind of like to hear what people's, you know, local culture, how it affects them and everything. So you're from Oregon originally, right?
Yes. Yeah, I've been here my entire life.
So, like, when I think of Portland, I think of it like Denver or Austin or Nashville. You know, there it seems like a small city that in the past 10 or so years has really gotten trendy and stuff like that. So, like, what... Since you're from there and you've seen it and you've been around for a while, like, what are your reflections on the way that Portland's changed over the years? And is there any crossover in the way, like, the occult communities have changed?
Oh, that's a good question. So I've only lived in Portland since 2011. And Portland is going through a huge population boom right now. So lots of people have been moving here. There's been tons and tons of construction. And the people who are moving here tend to be, you know, I don't get the impression that the people moving here are weird people. It's mm-hmm. sort of like waves of people following jobs and business and stuff, and they tend to not be super interesting. That's not a very nice thing to say.
No, that's what I was expecting you to say. That's what I was sort of getting at.
I would say they might be watering it down, but they all, at the same time, maybe not. You know, I mean, a lot of the people in sort of my closest circles of occultists are fairly new to the city. So it could be that people are moving here because it's welcoming to that sort of stuff. That's one of the things that I really loved about moving to Portland, because I lived in Southern Oregon, which is fairly rural, and it's hard to be unusual. It's hard to be a weird person or an unusual person in a rural area, because rural Americans are not very tolerant.
Sure.
And And especially communities can have, like, a, you know, cities and stuff tend to be fairly conservative and not very open to people being different or unusual. So and it can hurt things like business opportunities and income and jobs and social life, and it can, you know, affect everything. So it was interesting moving to Portland and being in a city where nobody really cared, where, like, I could be like, you know, I'm a wizard, and nobody would care. They'd be like, oh yeah, well, that dude's a furry and that dude's possessed by a demon, and, you know, everybody else has mohawks, so that's cool. Be a wizard.
That's awesome. I think you just convinced me that I should move to Portland. I feel like it sounds like a really good time.
Yeah, right now I think our rents are decreasing because they overbuilt. So yeah, it's totally a good time.
Yeah, it's surprising how small the occult community is here in Chicago. Like, I don't know how many people we have, like 3 million, something like that. Yeah. And
Chicago's huge. I think it's bigger than 3.
Yeah, it might even be bigger than 3.
I'm so bad at numbers. With, like, numbers like that, I have no idea.
But we just have, like, 2 occult shops, and there's, like, a couple different communities, like, here and there, but I feel like I run into the same people. Like, the same 10 people are going to all of the events. So I feel like it doesn't really have much going on, you know, with the scene, as you would expect for such a large city.
Yeah, I guess that's disappointing.
Well, I mean, we don't know for sure. Like, I feel like there are a lot of people that we just have not met, or maybe we have. Like, Scarlett and I started hanging out, and we were just on the same page. We could talk about, you know, tarot, astrology, anything esoteric, anything new agey, and it, you know, we could share podcasts and videos and authors that we like and stuff. There are a few groups, and I really have met cool people at those groups. Mm-hmm. There's just something. There's like a little bit of social challenges with some of the people that I've encountered in this Chicago scene. It's like, and I don't really want to, like, be judgmental, but I feel like I'm just not on the same page. Like, there's a fun way to be weird and different, and then there's just sort of like, I feel
slightly
just,
creepy way.
There's a slightly, like, there's social cues are a little off, and it's like, are you like into this stuff because you're sort of like working through some sort of mental health or like challenges? Like, I don't know. I feel like both of us are good muggles on the surface, but a lot of the occult people we meet are maybe like, that person is definitely like at the Wicca gathering, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, you could look at both of us and have no idea that we were into all this crazy shit until you looked us up online. But
yeah, I guess I mean, you get a mix in Portland, you know. I'm thinking of people that I know, and like, there are some people like Jay Swafford, who designed the Picatrix Deccans deck. That is an awkward name, isn't it? It's a deck of cards that is all the Picatrix Deccan images. It's a beautiful deck. But you look at him and you're sort of like, oh yeah, that's just an ordinary guy. And then you start talking to him and you're like, oh man, this dude is like a hardcore ceremonial magician, multimedia artist. And then there are other people, you know, like my buddy Nate, who's been on the podcast a few times. You look at him and you're right away sort of thinking, that guy has got to be some sort of like terrifying evil magician. And he's not terrifying or evil, but he's, you know, he's like deep into esoteric Freemasonry and other stuff that he probably doesn't want me mentioning on the internet. So yeah, I mean, you get a mix. You get a really broad mix. I once met a guy from the OTO.
Oh, I know people in the OTO.
Yeah, there is a Chicago OTO.
I've been many times. Yeah. I'm not a member, though.
Yeah, there's actually a famous OTO branch in Chicago. I'm totally going to...
The Amha Lodge. I'm friends with the High Priestess there. She's
and those
really cool.
Are the ones that have, like, the OTO voodoo stuff with, like, the time travel spider web techniques and things like that.
Well, I haven't gone too deep into it. So I've just attended like the Gnostic Mass from time to time. So I don't think I'm going to become a member of the OTO, but, you know, I just attend every once in a while because I'm friends with the High Priestess. And I mean, it's a cool thing to experience. And for our listeners that might not be familiar, the OTO stands for the Order of the Templo Orientis. And it has a lot to do with Aleister Crowley and his ideas. But, you know, I definitely recommend for the listeners who might not be aware, just like look it up and consider going to a Gnostic Mass, because it's like a really interesting ritual to experience and to be part of. Definitely not for everyone, but
I'm working through what I'm comfortable with and what I like and everything. And I'm pretty damn open-minded, but in general, I just sort of have an aversion to Crowley for now. So I haven't been, and I don't know much about it.
I don't necessarily have an aversion to Crowley, but I do. I'm not really into the religion behind the OTO, so it's not really for me. But there's a really active OTO chapter here. I know that there's actually a really good OTO chapter in Minneapolis. I've got a friend who has been attending some of their events, and it sounds really cool. And I think they've got guys like Rufus Opus and
Live in Minneapolis?
I don't know if he lives in Minneapolis, but I think he goes to the OTO meetings there.
I have his whatever that book is, the Seven Spheres.
The Seven Spheres is an excellent system.
Yeah. I didn't like see any archangels, but I didn't try very hard. But it was really cool to just like, you know, read through it and get the sense of like, astrology is my like bedrock, you know, and that's like very planetary. So, you know, that was immediately interesting to me, but I've not had any real tangible experiences work out, you know, the way he described it in the book, at least.
Yeah. My only advice to you there would be that sometimes you need to let go of your expectations for what real is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah. After that, it gets kind of weird.
Yeah. So you mentioned Freemason, and is one of your co-hosts a Freemason, or are you also a Freemason?
All three of us are Freemasons. Oh. That's actually how we met. Nate also, who shows up sometimes, is a Freemason. We've also had some co-Masons on our podcast every once in a while. Freemasonry is a pretty big part of... Now, so Freemasonry is not going to be as steeped in occult stuff, depending on where you are in the world, but in Oregon, in Portland, there are quite a few. There's a pretty big crossover between younger members who are younger Masons and occultists.
Yeah, because I feel like I've been hearing more and more younger people kind of start to get interested in Freemasonry. Yeah. And I was a bit surprised, because it did seem to me like something kind of like older people do, like it was more kind of like a fraternity type thing. But yeah, I think maybe there is some type of resurgence going on.
Yeah, I think there is. It's not quite enough to make up for the losses that we're having from old people dying. But the nice thing is that the young people who are joining have a really good outlook on what Freemasonry should be offering and what it should be doing in the world, and they're sort of turning it into more of what I was expecting to find when I first joined the fraternity, which is a group of curious philosophical seekers who want to practice the art of virtue.
So when, like, with you being a member and everything, what is that? What is your like day or I guess week to week, month to month experience? Like you go to the, you pay the dues obviously, and you do the initiation and everything. Did you just kind of like walk in and say, "Hey, I want to be a Freemason"? Or
yes, I did. It was about 19 years ago though. In Ashland, Oregon, and I basically just walked into the lodge there, and I think I called the lodge is what I did. I called it on a landline. I don't know if you guys have ever seen those before.
Well, we have.
We're like in our 30s.
We're 30, telephone 31.
I was... sorry. no, but I called the lodge and was invited to come down for like their Thursday morning coffee and donuts thing. And I walked in and I was the youngest guy there by probably 50 years, maybe 40 years. I don't know. I was in my 20s at the time. And it was like they, you know, it again, this is a sort of experience. It's going to be different from lodge to lodge, but in most lodges, you have to ask to be a member. Like they aren't allowed to recruit you. And some lodges, and it's getting more common now where lodges are being more discreet and more careful about who they give petitions to. So the lodge I went to, they were just so excited that anybody was interested that they gave me a petition right away. They didn't even know me. But the lodge that I belong to now, Esoterica Lodge in Portland, we don't let anybody join until they've been coming to public events at our lodge for at least 6 months. Mm-hmm. And then there are other lodges in Portland who sometimes can be even stricter. So it really has to do with like the lodge itself. It really wants to be sort of a cohesive, very trusting group of friends, right? So when somebody shows up and is like, "I want to be a Mason," the lodge should be evaluating them and like, is this guy going to fit in? You know, do they have something that they're bringing to the table? Are they here just for mercenary motives? Like, there's all these things that should be asked and stuff. But yeah, it's not quite as simple as like walking in and being like, "Hey, I want to be a Mason." Usually, there's a little bit of a, you know, they want to get to know you first.
So, as far as like as much of a commitment in your life, is it like a weekly thing? Is it a monthly thing? Is it a daily thing? Like, what do you actually have to do to be a part of it? Because even that is sort of unclear to me.
It really depends. I mean, you can just be a very surface level Mason who barely does anything and go through the initiations and then never go back to lodge.
Mm-hmm.
And beyond that, the level of involvement that you can have is really up to you and your ability to learn how to say no. Like, if you show an eagerness to be involved, people will be inviting you to more and more stuff, and you'll be invited to take more and more, take on more and more responsibility, more and more ritual roles. But at probably like the... So first of all, the during the joining process, going through the first three Blue Lodge degrees, that tends to be a lot of work. There's a lot of memorization that has to be done, and there are the three initiations that you have to go through, and then after you do those three initiations and the memory work that goes along with them, after that, probably the minimum investment to sort of be considered like an active, useful Mason, I would guess it's probably like two nights a month.
And like, what do you guys do? Like, do you guys, I mean, other than
what
the rituals,
goes on in those buildings?
Well, I know it's again, secret, again, that's, but
that's from lodge to lodge. I can tell you what my lodge does. Because I love my lodge. I love my lodge. And I think that we do incredible stuff. So I'll tell you about what two different lodges in Portland do. So my lodge is Esoterica Lodge. Our lodge is focused on Masonic education and ritual experience. So we meet pretty much two nights a month. One night is our what's called our stated meeting or our stated communication, which is our ritualized meeting, where we have a ritual opening, a structured agenda. And that agenda is going to involve things like you know, we have to pay bills and talk about our minutes and talk about sort of the business of running the lodge. But then we spend most of the meeting having discussions about Masonic philosophy or listening to people give talks about some aspect of Freemasonry and then discussing that. Sometimes we do guided meditations. And then we have a ritualized closing, and then we all go downstairs and we have a drink together and we talk until the guy with the keys to the building kicks us out.
That sounds fun.
If you wanted it for networking purposes, it serves that function too, right?
It is crappy for networking purposes.
It is.
I've done a little bit of networking there. I've gotten a few jobs here and there through Freemasonry, you know, as a freelance type things. But it's really not good for job networking. In fact, most of the people in my lodge, if you ask me what they do for a living, I've got no idea. We never talk about that. We're instead talking about like the significance of, you know, the theological virtues on Jacob's ladder, or you know, the astrological symbolism in the lodge, or like we're way off in the weeds somewhere. We're not talking about like, oh yeah, I had a crappy day filling out my TSA reports at the office. My cubicle walls are a delightful shade of gray. We don't talk about that. So now I'll compare that to another lodge. Another one of my favorite lodges in Portland, Columbia Lodge, is very much, I mean, it's an incredible group of people. And they're all, it's a really tight-knit friends group that is sort of the core of that lodge. And it grows, it's been growing a lot recently. And there's probably a dozen or so guys who go to that lodge. They meet in the evening. They have a dinner together that's really delicious usually. They go have their business meeting, and their business meeting consists of the same stuff where they have to pay some bills, they have to take care of minutes. They usually have one or more community service events that they're either planning or wrapping up. So they'll talk about those. Whether they're fundraisers or they do like a picnic every year where they sort of host it for other lodges in the area, so they take care of that business. They usually have a very short discussion on Masonic philosophy, and then they close up and they go across the street to the bar and they have some beer and they talk about Freemasonry and tell jokes.
Yeah. So as far as women aren't allowed to be Freemasons, but there's a separate organization called the Order of the Eastern Star. Is that right?
Yeah, it's a little bit more complicated than that. We probably don't want to spend the whole time talking about this because there are some great resources that could do a more succinct job explaining it than I could. Yeah, the Order of the Eastern Star is part of the group, the Masonic sort of super group that I'm in, which we usually call... sometimes it's called regular Freemasonry. Sometimes it's called conservative Freemasonry. But it is in the branch of Freemasonry that I'm part of, which is by far the largest branch in the United States by like orders and orders of magnitude. The Blue Lodge, the Masonic Lodge, is men only. And the Order of the Eastern Star is an appendant body that has men and women in it. Mm-hmm. But there are other organizations. So for instance... Le Droit Humain is a French order of Freemasonry that is fairly active in the United States that has men and women as members. There are a number of other organizations. Like, you really have to look around and see what's available, but women can be Freemasons, just not in my particular organization.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for sharing, because like, I don't know, I mean, I've discovered what Freemasonry is via conspiracy theories. And like when I was a kid, I didn't know what was going on, you know? And I think a lot of people pre-YouTube, unless their family was in it or something, they probably would not know what the hell Freemasonry is. And over the years, it's sort of gotten a lot of crazy associations with it. But I think you're the only real Mason that I've had a conversation like this with. So it's interesting to hear what's actually going on there.
Yeah, it's funny. I have Mason friends across the United States, but I don't think I know any Freemasons in Chicago.
I know there's a lodge in Evanston that has like, I was kind of looking into it because we're on the north side of the city and Evanston is just right north. They have some kind of like chalice or something. It's like a gold cup with like the zodiac on it, but that's their like sort of, I don't want to call it a sacred object, but it's like, come visit this lodge and see the gold cup or something. So that's the only thing I know about that lodge. But I think, you know, Evanston, that's where Northwestern University is. And it seems like it probably is an old school lodge, I'm guessing, because Evanston is an old town. So,
yeah, I always find it fascinating sometimes when you see these lodges and they're like, if you're driving through kind of more rural America and like you go through a pretty much dead town, there's always like a Masonic lodge still there.
Yeah.
You know, and it's, and then sometimes I'll be like just going about my day and I'll see like someone with a Masonic ring or like a license plate with the symbol. And I'm like, oh, he's a Mason. Yeah. But I don't really know what that means. But I'm like, oh, this is cool. I found the lodge.
Watch list for a long time, Scarlett. So.
Hey, I'd join if I could. But well, who knows? I'm going to look into these other kind of offshoots and maybe consider joining. And in part, I feel like it's like I was in a sorority in college. So I love the whole like ritual aspect of being in a sorority, like the initiation and the regular meetings and like the sense of community. So I feel like I've been missing that since college.
Well, I'll tell you, there's a few things. So first of all, if you're interested in Lidwahumont, let me know back channel and I'll get you in touch with some people. So Wicca, for instance, like formalized Wicca, like Gardnerian stuff, is kind of like the great granddaughter of Freemasonry. And there's stuff in Wicca that is directly descended from Freemasonry. For instance, the phrase "So mote it be."
Yeah,
that's totally Freemasonry.
Oh.
The 3-degree initiation system. Totally Freemasonry. And then also like the whole lodge magic style. So the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn and the OTO are sort of like the two biggest sort of like lodge magic groups that are still operating in some form. But that style of doing ceremonial magic and having it be in the form of a lodge opening and closing and these sort of like strict sort of lodge officer roles, totally stolen from Freemasonry. So in a way, Freemasonry has had this huge effect on sort of the occult community and pagan religions as they're being practiced today, that that Masons, mainstream Freemasonry, really doesn't want people to pay attention to. And since mainstream Freemasonry is so old man dorky, I think that a lot of pagans don't want to pay attention to that connection either. So it's an interesting rabbit hole of research to go down, and I would totally encourage you to poke that hornet's nest and see what comes out of it. I mean, yeah. I suppose if it's a hornet's nest, hornets will come out of it. Poke that mysterious unknown nest and hope that it's not full of hornets.
Well, speaking of poking the hornet's nest, it seems like you might own a few grimoires or two, or old texts and stuff. And, you know, you mentioned you like nerding out on like the hardcore occultism. Like, what have you tried? And give us all the juicy details. Like, what's like the craziest experience you've had like messing with this stuff? As much as you want to actually tell us, you know.
Oh, sure, sure. Well, it's all been pretty crazy. I started sort of down the crazy occult road when I was fairly young. I got my first tarot deck probably when I was like 12 or 13 or 14 or something.
Oh,
so
me too.
A zillion years ago. Yeah. It was the Alice in Wonderland tarot. It's one of those sort of novelty decks, totally based on the Rider-Waite-Smith, but everything's replaced with like rabbits and girls in blue dresses and stuff. And I started playing with that then. I got, like, my first books on Wicca. I think I had, like, some Scott Cunningham and Raymond Buckland books when I was a kid, and I started playing with those sorts of things. And my whole sort of from that point on, it was just sort of this cascading collection of fringe spirituality and alternative religions and stuff until I started to get into Kabbalah and ceremonial magic, probably right around maybe a couple years before I became a Freemason. But I never really always knew what I was doing. I ended up, through just sheer good fortune, becoming good friends with John Michael Greer. You guys heard of him?
I totally know that name.
He was my neighbor.
What is his claim to fame?
John Michael Greer has been a very prolific and well-known occult author for years. He's the archdruid of the ancient order of druids in America. He's like a grandmaster of tarot. I don't know if they do that grandmaster program anymore, but he's been around for ages, and he's been publishing stuff for a long, long time.
He does a lot of podcasts, right?
I've heard him on a few podcasts. He's been on A Culture a few times, and
yeah. If it's the guy I'm thinking of, I think he's really interesting to listen to. I'm pretty sure I'm thinking of the right guy.
He is fascinating to listen to and fascinating to talk to. He moved to Ashland probably in like 2003, 2004, and he joined my Masonic Lodge. And we just became really good friends, and it turns out we were living like a block away from each other. So we used to go over to each other's houses all the time. I'd like go over to his house, and he'd be telling me all this crazy stuff, and I'd be like taking notes like crazy. And he kind of got me into Renaissance magic. Like, he really got me started looking at that. And I, at the time, I think probably the only thing I had that could be considered a grimoire was the giant black paperback three books of occult philosophy.
Right.
You guys, Agrippa, right? Both totally have this book. Yeah. Tell me you have this book.
I've only looked at the PDF, so for all intents and purposes, no.
All right, you guys have to go buy it this weekend. this book is sort of the cornerstone of everything that we really do in Western style magic these days. Like, you'll find everything in there, all of, like, including all of the witchcraft stuff, you know, like all of the herbs and how they tie to the planets and all, everything is in there. The astrological stuff alone is worth the contents. So he really got me started on sort of using Agrippa and combining it with some Golden Dawn techniques and doing stuff like that. And over that many years, there have been boring times with magic, and then there's been like the crazy stuff where you're sort of like, how the hell did that even work?
Yeah. Right?
And I don't necessarily want to give a lot of it away, but I have, for instance, when I was first really starting out with stuff, I was doing this like tarot contemplation where you know, every day you'd pull one card and it'd be like a contemplative focus, and you'd, you know, meditated on in the morning, and in the evening you'd come back to it and be like, how did this card, you know, relate to my day, blah, 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 blah. And I remember I was going through a really, really rough patch. My marriage was falling apart. My life was like this huge pile of stress, and nothing felt right, which I think probably happens to every occultist at some point or another. You know, you have to go along the fool's journey, and at some point you're going to hit the tower.
God, there's been a few towers on my path.
Yeah, well, this is probably me too. But this was a big tower for me, and I just remember like sort of sitting there one day, you know, I had finished all of my opening rituals and I was getting ready to do the tarot contemplation, and I just saw in my head the Ten of Swords, which is a card that nobody really wants to see in their head or anywhere, right? You don't want the Ten of Swords anywhere. And then I drew a card and it was the Ten of Swords. And it was just so, like, the image of the drawing was so perfect before I drew it that I was like, holy shit, I saw the future.
Yeah.
And then I think that was a totally shitty day too. Just just to round it all out. So, you know, sometimes there are things like that where there are these moments of like serendipitous stuff where like time doesn't seem to work right, or you seem to see things that aren't there, or stuff just sort of happens. And then other times you just end up in weird situations with interesting people doing bizarre whatevers. A great example of that is, I don't know if you listened to my Halloween episode from 2018.
Probably.
Where, yeah, I'm not sure.
I got together with Alex Bullen from the Alex Cast, and we summoned a cartoon demon in the middle of a park in the middle of Portland.
That sounds really, it's ringing a bell for sure.
Well, we didn't see a demon, but it was a sort of idea, like we probably came up with it while we were drinking, and then we decided to follow through on it when we weren't, and it was fun. It was weird.
Yeah.
So, but also, you know, I mean, through it, you know, there's an old argument between like differing schools of Neoplatonism in late antiquity, whether philosophers should be theurgists or thaumaturgists, whether and it sort of continues now, like you have like magic as this sort of path of like spiritual development, but you also have like, you know, here's a spell to win the lottery, or, you know, make somebody fall in love with you, or, you know, make a cat explode or whatever. And so it's this question of like, is it okay? Should a practicing occultist or a magician or a witch or whatever you want to call them, should they only be focusing on the stuff that is designed to like elevate the spirit and purify the soul and move us closer to some sort of like godly revelation? Or should they be using, you know, the influences of energy and spirits and stars to change the world around them? And I think it's a combination of both. But I would say that the more rewarding part is the theurgy, you know, the working on like improving the self and understanding how the self works and that sort of stuff. So the most amazing revelations I've had, the most amazing magical operations I've done have been things that have been towards that end, which means there hasn't been very much flashy shit, unfortunately.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so I've been studying astrology actually for the last couple of years, but I haven't really been looking at the natal stuff. I've only been doing it as sort of electional astrology for talismans.
Yeah, like electional astrology is really interesting too, because it gets you thinking about the angles between, you know, like the four, the first, fourth, seventh, and tenth house. That angle is very significant when you're choosing an election. And yeah, I mean, it's a deep, deep rabbit hole, but
yeah,
that is a really good way to learn, though.
Yeah, it's been pretty fascinating. You know, I've mostly been using the Picatrix for that, and Agrippa. So mainly what I have done anyhow is sort of made like checklists. Like, here are the good things to look for, here are the bad things to watch out for, and that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I do a little bit of that too, like not necessarily to make talismans, but I've even used elections to post the podcast, like instead of doing it just whenever, it's like I'll do it when this is the rising sign and this planet is in this house or whatever. So there's little things you can do to just like initiate, to like hit send on that email at a certain election, to submit, put something in the mailbox at a certain election. So
yeah, that's
you
true.
Should
that's
briefly explain for our listeners what election astrology is, just because people might not be aware of it.
Electional astrology is basically when
it's not about voting for the president.
for Eric, he was talking about making talismans. So, you know, you can make a magical object that would be like imbued with the powers of the planets or the signs at a certain time. So the ascendant is the sign that is in basically at the point of the eastern horizon, you know, everything is moving across, you know, it's like a big wheel basically that's constantly turning throughout the day as the earth spins. So the ascendant changes signs every like two or so hours, depending on the time of the day. But you're basically setting up a chart to elect the initiation of a thing. So if you're making a magical object, you are choosing the time so that the object has these powers at these times. But if you're using it the way I use it, it's like I want a strong Mercury thing. Like I'm sending an email blast, for example. Mm-hmm. I would wait for the ascendant to reach a certain point at a certain day so that when I hit send, the chart that I would cast for that moment would be laid out in a strategic way, I guess. So it's electional astrology is basically timing stuff so that the stars happen perfectly. And when you're an astrologer, you know what are strong placements and weak placements. And like, so if I was trying to do a Mercury election, I would wait for Mercury to not be retrograde, you know? but like Jupiter right now is in Sagittarius, which is its home sign. So now is a really good time for doing Jupiter stuff. And you would time it so that Jupiter was maybe in the first house or the 10th house, not being harmed by any other outside influences. So this is more
tough,
like...
It's been tough to find that too. Jupiter's been getting hammered on a lot by...
Wait, didn't you I think Dan got a lottery ticket and he won when like Jupiter was something. Was that right?
That was not quite electional astrology. That was more because the new moon in Pisces was in my fifth house and I bought the lotto ticket close to the new moon. And the fifth house is the house of pleasure, sort of like... just good stuff. And I hadn't even heard that the fifth house was a good time to buy a new moon in the fifth house was a good time to buy the lottery ticket, but I just did and I won $50. But the Mercury retrograde fucked that up and I scraped off the barcode. And yesterday I had to go to the goddamn Illinois lottery DMV basically, which was like hell on earth, let me tell you. It took me like an hour.
Was it worth the $50?
No, and my parking was like almost $20 because it was like in the government center downtown with all of the... If we're talking about, you know, like demonic vibes, go to your local government center.
If you live near Evanston, why don't you just take the L?
Well, I'm like an Uber and Lyft driver, and the office is like in the heart of downtown, and I was just like, hey, I'll swing. And I was also contesting a parking ticket, which I couldn't do yesterday. So like yesterday afternoon was sort of like I was in like Dante's seventh layer of hell in the Chicago like downtown government centers. But yeah, I got $50 minus the $18 to park, so I got freaking $32, yay, after an hour of like torture. So
yeah, there's some Mercury retrograde for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, if I were you, I would take the $32 and I would go to like Three Floyds or something and have a really, really good beer.
Oh yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, we kind of went on a big tangent here, but
oh yeah, okay, let's get back to your you must have like other specific questions for me, or what the heck was I talking about?
Well, we were talking about like grimoires and talking about kind of your experiences, but I think we're going to be wrapping up pretty soon. Did you have anything specifically that you wanted to share, anything you've been working on lately?
Let's see. Well, I mean, you know, I know that you guys know me through my podcast, but I also have a website, Arnomancy, that I've been running for a long time, where I write a lot about like hermetic philosophy and tarot and other occult stuff. So, and that's been going pretty strong. I don't know what happened recently, but I think I might have done some So, you know, I'm kind of a computer nerd, so I pay attention to like website stats and where visitors come from and all that kind of stuff. And somewhere in the last month, I don't know what the heck I did right. I did something and my traffic increased dramatically. It's very exciting. So I guess that means I have to write more blog posts. So anybody who's listening to this should probably go to the Arne Mansi website and see if there's a new blog post.
Nice, yeah.
Because it'll probably be really good.
Well, yeah, like we follow your, like, you're on Twitter and Instagram. You put a lot of stuff on your Arne Mansi, like, social media pages, too, which are fun. It seems like you have, like, a lot of cool images and texts that seem more Renaissance and, like, old school, which is a really cool imagery to work with.
Yeah, I work a lot with Renaissance magic and Renaissance techniques. So like I'm really big on image magic, you know. So in fact, I was going to interrupt you when you were talking about election astrology, because one of the things that's kind of hidden in a lot of the texts is that it's not objects necessarily that receive like the stellar influences of astrological talismans. It's images. And sometimes we use the object to keep the image, but you'll see this stated more explicitly in some of the later stuff. The image happens in the soul. So the imagination, which creates the image, is the actual receptor of the influences, and you're just sort of keeping it in an object, but you can also keep it inside you.
Interesting. Yeah, the Picatrix, right? There's a lot of really specific images there, mm-hmm. right, with all the deckhands and stuff. That's stuff that I really want to learn. I just need to get me a copy of the Picatrix, I guess.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of interesting stuff there, but also Giordano Bruno talks about it, and you kind of get hints of it even way far back. Like if you look at some of the images and drawings and stuff in like the Greek magical papyri, those guys were awful artists. Like truly awful artists. And you can't imagine that they were like making these horrible sketches on things and being like, look, it's a magic image. And people were looking at it and be like, oh, is that a stick figure horse? You know, so there's definitely like something else going on there with the way images work. We probably don't have a whole lot of time to get into it right now, but it's definitely a really interesting area of research for anybody who's getting into this kind of stuff.
Yeah, that sounds so interesting. And for our listeners, like if you listen to My Alchemical Bromance, there's lots of cool in-depth discussions on stuff that, you know, on our show we are we're not quite as in-depth, but if you're curious to learn more, definitely check out the Arne Mansi blog, the social media pages, and My Alchemical Bromance.
Yeah, and I guess another thing that I wanted to mention is that I use sort of the same image magic techniques when I read tarot.
Oh, interesting, yeah.
So I have a tarot reading technique that is sort of like really intricately tied to the Renaissance art of memory, and it uses the same kind of image techniques that the art of memory uses.
Well, that sounds fascinating. Yeah, do you have a blog post about that?
I've written about it a little bit, but I didn't realize until fairly recently that I was doing something that other people weren't doing. I thought this was how everybody memorized and used the tarot. And then when I talk to other people who are either learning it or have been doing it for a while, I'm like, oh, have I stumbled upon something new? And then I was reading a book by Giordano Bruno that was recently translated, and I realized that what I had done is I had recreated a memory technique that he had written down like 500 years ago, 400 years ago. Wait, I don't even know what year it is, but something like that. So yeah, I'm still sort of trying to figure out what I've done or how to talk about it, but it has to do with sort of creating these memory structures, like grids and three-dimensional structures in which the sort of like concepts of the different cards sort of live and work. And it mostly works for me anyhow, I mostly use it for the minor arcana, in particular, like the 1 through 10s, and then the court cards sort of have their own ways of working that I that I use. And then for the major arcana, it's the Fool's Journey, which, like, I think every tarot reader learns how to sort of interpret the Fool's Journey, or sort of read the Fool's Journey, or talk about it, which is a memory palace technique. We just don't necessarily recognize it as such. So, when I do it, I can read the tarot like a weird crossword puzzle, maybe a Scrabble board.
Awesome. Yeah, we're definitely going to need to look into that more and keep studying. Thank you so much for talking with us today. This has been such a fun conversation, even though I feel like we went all over the place, but I feel like it's going to be a great episode for our listeners.
Well, for the record, Mercury is square Jupiter today, so, so it makes sense.
I don't know that I've ever been a guest on a podcast where afterwards the podcast host is like, "You did a great job staying on topic."
We don't want to stay on topic.
So. Yeah, that's what makes podcasts fun.
I'm glad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I like it. I love the conversational aspect of it. And it's been a real pleasure not only to discover your podcast like so early in its life and sort of follow it, but to be a guest. So thank you guys very much for having me on.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Eric. And again, for our listeners, check out My Alchemical Bromance, available wherever podcasts are played, right?
Yeah. And Arnimacy, the website.
Awesome.
Well, yes. Thanks.
All right, thanks, Eric.
So thanks for listening to our episode today. I really enjoyed our interview with Eric from My Alchemical Bromance. And we'd love to hear from you guys if you guys are enjoying our podcast. I know we're still kind of new onto the scene, and it'd really help us out a lot if you gave us a 5-star review on iTunes. Or if you have any guests that you'd like us to interview or any topics you'd be interested in having us discussing, definitely go ahead and send us an email. We're at cosmickeyspodcast@gmail.com, or you can just DM us on the gram. So we are at cosmic_keys_podcast. So definitely get in touch with us. We'd love to hear from you guys and get some feedback. So thanks again for watching.
Thanks, guys. See you next week.